This past summer, I wrote a letter of recommendation to the First UU Society of Albany, introducing myself as their new intern minister for this year. It included the typical stuff you would find in such a letter: where I went to seminary, my hobbies, my passions, some goals. But it also contained a rather personal disclosure. Before I arrived in Albany, I'd wondered how I might be welcomed and accepted there. In my experience, even the most enlightened UUs can be uncomfortable with people who are different. You see, in that letter, I told them that I was transgender. I easily could not have shared this aspect of myself, but I chose to do so, as I am with you right now, because transgender lives continue to be threatened in a world that refuses to accept us. It feels important to me that more people become better educated and knowledgeable about the challenges that those of us who identify as transgender face, and how much we need allies to create and expand space for an expression of all gender identities. When I was a child, I was the proverbial tomboy. I didn't know then that I was transgender. I didn't have the language yet, didn't have the vocabulary. I played with my brother's G.I. Joes, I played football, I went fishing. I'd rather play kickball with the boys during recess than hang out with the girls on the swings. How boring. I abhorred wearing dresses and detested anything flowery or girly. My mom said that she even had me empty my pockets out at night before I went to bed because there would be various assortments of rocks and bugs and worms and other treasures in them. I remember when I was about 6, my mom took me to get my hair cut. And I'll never forget how I was sitting in that little booster seat waiting for the beautician to come. I leaned over and whispered to my mom, "I want my hair cut like a boy's." I'll never forget the look on my mom's face. She didn't need to say anything, but she clearly communicated to me how totally inappropriate and unnatural that request was. Never mentioned it again, or any of the other topic related to gender, but I was left feeling that there was something not right about me. I didn't fully understand yet that the puzzle pieces of my identity that I wanted to put together, boy puzzle pieces, were inappropriate and not allowed. And I resented being forced to use someone else's pieces because I knew who I was. Why didn't everybody else? As I entered adolescence, I resisted puberty with every fiber of my being. My gender was questioned frequently. I was neither accepted by the girls nor the boys. Teasing, bullying, commonplace. So I developed a very low self-esteem. I was very self-conscious about my body, and I was horribly shy. I never told anyone about my inner angst, about my gender, not even my mom. As I grew into adulthood, the thought of living within the social expectations and norms repulsed me. I felt very alone and isolated. But by this time, I clearly understood that to survive in this world, I had to put together a false puzzle using other people's pieces. That is, my identity was based on the projections of what society expected of someone born with a female body, and not my own sense of self. In fact, I spent the better part of my life chasing normal. much to my detriment. I was obsessed with this desire to be perceived as a normal female. And I desperately wanted that acceptance, that validation. And God, did I try. However, I inflicted a lot of emotional pain on myself by trying to live by society standards. I tried to force my round peg into society's square hole. And when I failed, and how could I not fail? It did nothing but to reinforce my belief that I was somehow less than. Paul Tillich's words that we heard, that grace strikes us when our disgust for our own being, our indifference, our weakness, our hostility, and our lack of direction and composure have become intolerable to us, describe perfectly how I felt about my life up until about 9 years ago. Up until then, I had not yet experienced the grace of acceptance. But I did. And that grace, in fact, came when I least expected it. It was at the beginning of my first semester of seminary in the fall of 2010 that I met Brent, a fellow student. We became very close friends quite quickly. And early in that semester, Brent disclosed to me that he was transgender. Had he not shared that with me, I would never have known that he was trans. And I felt honored that he trusted me with that information so early on in our friendship. And his disclosure completely transformed my life. Over that semester, Brent shared his story with me, and he told me about his transition. And I listened with great interest. I was fascinated by what I was hearing. I never knew this thing, this gender transition, was possible. I mean, sure, I've heard words like sex change operation, but I'd never really understood how a person could undergo such a thing. Up until that point in my life, I had made peace with myself with the fact that I had a female body. And I resigned myself to living within the cultural and social expectations of someone with such a body. That was just how things were. I was still chasing normal then, which meant that I felt obligated to live as a woman, even though I really never accepted myself as one. Imagine my surprise then, and the swell of hope and excitement when Brent shared his story with me. Suddenly, my entire life went through a complete paradigm shift. All the puzzle pieces finally fit together, the right kind of pieces that showed the true picture of me. So many things made sense then. The realization that I was trans explained so much about my life experience. And by that Thanksgiving, I had made the decision to transition to male. In the moment of that decision, I experienced the grace of acceptance by accepting myself for the first time. So in January of 2011, at the beginning of my second semester of seminary, I came out as being transgender. That is, I shared my true, authentic self, and I disclosed to my family, my church, my friends, my seminary, that I was transitioning. And what I experienced in that coming out was nothing short of miraculous. I experienced that grace of acceptance in every aspect of my life. However, I was a little nervous about telling my mom. But it turned out I had nothing to be nervous about. When I told her, to my surprise, she started laughing. She said, "It's about damn time. I always knew." Wow. Thanks, Mom. I was a little miffed that she had never broached the topic with me before, but I was relieved beyond measure. And even though my transition was relatively easy, it was not without problems. As a member of the trans community, I have experienced instances of hate, oppression, bigotry at the hands of fundamentalists and religious and political conservatives. Just because of who I am, I've been labeled by some segments of society as being evil, perverted, godless, a threat to society, a threat to traditional marriage. Horrible things have been said to my face, that I was mentally ill, morally empty, a Satanist, that's different, and then I should be euthanized. That last one was the hardest one to stomach, and it still stings. But as emotionally and as spiritually hurtful as these labels are, the real problems come into play in the practical and everyday aspects of my life and my concerns for my own safety. In most states, I can be fired from a job, denied health care, denied housing, and be evicted because I'm trans. And I was born in Tennessee, one of the only three states that still refuse to change birth certificates. Makes getting a passport very challenging. And every time I fill out a government form, apply for a job that requires a background check, every time I open a bank account or a charge account, every time I do anything that requires that I submit my Social Security number, I am outed. My trans identity is made known to others without my knowledge or consent, because my Social Security number will forever be tied to my former name. There's nothing more unnerving than standing in the DMV in a crowded room full of grumpy people and having to explain the discrepancy between my Social Security number and my name to a clueless clerk. And it's also very dangerous. I'm sure you've heard of the so-called bathroom bills that would make it a crime to use a public restroom different than that of the gender indicated on one's birth certificate. Again, I have a problem. I would be required to use the women's restroom, which would not only frighten the women, it would put me at serious risk of violent attack. And then there's the ever-present and inherent risk of physical attack if I'm ever outed in public arena in certain places. But physical attacks are not the only kind of attacks. Microaggressions can cause great harm. Microaggressions are comments, actions, or questions directed at someone with a marginalized identity, such as people who are trans, people of color, people who are disabled. That on the surface, these comments and questions can seem innocuous, even supportive. Microaggressions can cause real, often significant harm, though often the aggressor is unaware that anything they're saying is wrong or what they did was wrong. Many times the aggressor considers themselves to be an ally. In regard to transgender microaggressions specifically, curiosity is probably the number one cause of inappropriate comments or questions that causes pain to a trans person, and why people are so curious about trans bodies baffles me. But as one former congregant told me when he demanded that I disclose something personal about my body, I'm not kidding, he said, inquiring minds want to know. Yeah, no. His curiosity did not obligate me to answer. Just as Brett shared his story with me over time, as we built a relationship, what I share about my story and my body is my decision, and it's never a response to someone's demand or curiosity. Microaggressions are commonplace. Even back home in my beloved congregation back in Dayton, my chosen family, the people there still don't always do a good job with the welcoming thing. I love these people, and I care deeply for them, but sometimes they just don't get it. And I experience many microaggressions from them during coffee hour. They're extremely well-meaning people. They have good intentions, and they want to be supportive. But I was often met with things like, "Have you had the surgery? What was your real name? How do you have sex?" I regularly had people come up to me and say things like, "Did you hear about the trans speaker who was coming to such and such venue next week? Did you read this article about this trans issue or this person?" Upon announcing my engagement to the congregation, someone said, "I'm so glad anyone can get married now." Really? What about a simple congratulations? It's not very welcoming. Reducing someone's humanity to a stereotype never is. There were times when, despite their good intentions, I felt pain from their insensitive and hurtful words. It was as if I wore a sign around my neck that says, "Hi, I'm Dan, I'm transgender. You can talk to me only about trans stuff, and it's okay to ask personal questions." I did a lot of compassionate educating, and things improved over time. People learned. Fewer people asked awkward questions during coffee hour, and I became less exoticized. And over the years, this congregation learned how to be more welcoming and accepting. And by doing so, they helped me feel like I was a fully accepted member of that community. I became family, and it totally changed my life. So this is what I leave with you. I strongly and passionately believe that the lives of LGBTQ+ people can be transformed exponentially if we feel like we belong somewhere, if we feel accepted and not marginalized, tokenized, exoticized, or ostracized. When we are free to live as our true, authentic selves, our whole selves, without having to feel like we need to chase normal just to survive. When we are offered the grace of acceptance, we're free to live into our potential without having to live under the shadow of judgment, misunderstanding, fear. What a powerful gift. And we all have the ability to give it. May it be so.